Clayton, everybody. Welcome on in to the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast, powered by NumberFire. That is right here on NumberFire.com and the NumberFire Podcast Network. It is our penultimate MLB podcast, Week 25, coming at you hot. I am Jim Sonnes. I am a writer for NumberFire.com, joined here, as always, by Brandon Gandula. He is a writer and editor for NumberFire. Brandon, Week 25 is here. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Football's been great. Thursday night, that game was amazing.
It was the best game I've ever seen.
Yeah. Baseball is down to the players who I've never heard of and will maybe never hear of again. but we got to dig through all this because there's still an edge to be had in DFS.
You forgot that Mark Leishman is winning at the BMW Championship. Actually, he might have tanked by now. But regardless, hey, he was when I looked last, which was last night. So, hey, that's
first a round leader.
That's right. That's all that counts. That's not going to go with it. If you were listening earlier this year, you know we had an iTunes contest going down. That is now done. But, however, we do have a new contest going down. Every month, we'll have a new winner. And all you have to do to enter is go to iTunes, search for the NumberFire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed, rate the podcast, and comment on the podcast. You'll be entered into a drawing to win a NumberFire premium subscription. That is for a year. We can hook you up in about 2 minutes. So go there, leave a comment, rate the podcast, and get yourself entered. Again, one winner per podcast per month. So you can enter it through here via the Late Round Podcast, JG Zacharyson, Points in the Paint NBA Podcast. All those are eligible. So do it for us, you know? Why not check it out? NumberFire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed. Get yourself some NumberFire Premium. So let's take a look at this Week 25 MLB podcast. And Brandon, we got to talk bad offenses, man, because it's possibly because I'm tilted from Thursday night. But I think it's a good jumping off point here. We had talked before about how variable lineups can be in the final months of the year because teams are out of the playoff hunt. They will put in some scrubs to see what they can do and just kind of go from there. And that can lead to some pretty gross lineups. Lineups that normally aren't bad, but just suddenly hit the tanks. Specifically, Thursday night, the Miami Marlins decided to sit Marcell Ozuna, Giancarlo Stanton, and Christian Yelich all in the same day, leading to a lineup with D. Gordon, who is fine, Ichiro Suzuki, JT Realmuto, Justin Bour, Derek Dietrich. Those guys are okay outside of Ichiro. Then you've got Brian Anderson, Tyler Moore, Miguel Rojas, and Vance Worley. They were facing Jake Thompson, whose Sierra entering the start was like 5.5. And I really wanted to stack the Marlins. But then when I saw that lineup, it was like, oh boy, this could get ugly. And it did get ugly. Thompson was in the perfect lineups for FanDuel, I believe, last night. He went 5 1/3 innings, 6 strikeouts, no runs allowed. And this kind of forces us to have a discussion here, because if you look at that lineup last night, there was obviously value. Brian Anderson specifically was like 2,200, batting sixth at third base. You got to like that. But at the same time, if it's in a bad lineup, it's going to change the way you view that. Not only does it mean that the team will have less volume because fewer hits, fewer runs scored, stuff like that, but it also means fewer run scoring opportunities for guys like Anderson hitting deeper in the order, which lowers their value for DFS. If you lose Giancarlo Stanton, then JT Realmuto's expectation goes down. So I think that there are a couple of ways you can view this. The first one is that, you know, I think if they're going to be popular, I'm inclined to fade that lineup. And I think the Marlins last night probably were going to be with Ozuna, Stanton, or before Ozuna, Stanton, and Yelich sat. I think that they were all intriguing at that point. But then, so that would have forced me to probably fade the Marlins. And I do think that there are situations in which I can use a lineup like that, like the Marlins specifically. Let's look at that lineup last night. I could have talked myself into them if we thought they'd go overlooked. And if they could provide some value. The Marlins are a bit spendy because Realmuto, Bour, Dietrich, they're all up there in pricing. But overall, if they had like a bunch of 2,000 hitters facing Jake Thompson, maybe I would do it. So Brandon, I want to toss it over to you. I am okay using a wretched lineup if they'll go overlooked. What about you? How do you kind of play the situation where a team decides to bench pretty much every fantasy relevant guy they've got?
It depends a lot on if I need to pay up for a pitcher. If I do need to do that, then I'll spend down on a stack of guys who I've never really heard of. I mean, if I can get a 1-4 stack or a 2-5 stack that, isn't entirely terrible just to spend up for an elite arm, I'll do it because that's way more important to me than my hitters. But like you said, if they're going to be chalky, I'll look elsewhere. Even if that means going to a one-offs rather than full stacks, because fading chalky hitters is the way that I go. MLB DFS to me, it's almost as much game theory as any other sport. It's probably more game theory than any DFS sport, really, aside from golf because of the variance. So any non-pitcher who's chalky, tough to justify for me. And the bigger issue, like you mentioned, even though I'm overlooking your Ichiro slander.
I didn't slander Ichiro. I slandered 47-year-old Ichiro. Big difference. I would never slander real Ichiro.
Okay. The 1-5 there, Gordon, Ichiro, Real Muto, Bohr, Dietrich. I'd play those guys, but then the issue is the hitters lower in the order, they're going to depress the volume of the top guys. So
absolutely,
we have that trickle down of, Justin Bohr, for example, would lose out if Giancarlo Stanton's out of the lineup. Ozuna, Yelich, he's losing out, but then he's also losing out again because they're getting replaced by some terrible hitters. So I don't want to stack them, but if it's the only way that I can do it to roster an ace, that's pretty much the only way I'm going to do that.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the correct way of thinking. So it kind of comes down to the thing we've discussed multiple times here recently. Wait to fill out your lineups until later in the day compared to when you do it normally. Just see what the lineup looks like, because things will vary so heavily from day to day right now. Just fill them out later and go from there. That is probably the way you need to play September MLB DFS. Now, before we take a look at the trends for today, quick reminder, NFL season is now here. Week 2 coming at you on Sunday. You can catch all the games on TuneIn and the TuneIn app. Whether it's at home or on the go, listen to the home call of every game live or pop in and out of the action every Sunday with NFL First and Goal. That's TuneIn's audio red zone station. Download the TuneIn app today and listen to the NFL for free for 30 days. TuneIn is your everything audio app. And remember, you can also find all of Number Fire's podcasts on TuneIn just by searching for the Number Fire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed. You got this podcast. Our NFL Week 2 preview is in there. We broke down the trends, injuries, players you need for Week 2. That is in there. Also, the Late Round Podcast with J.G. Zacharyson. He had his Mailbag Podcast today, Friday. He also had a Start Sit Podcast on Thursday. So check all that out. Search for the Number Fire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed on TuneIn and get yourself 30 free days of listening to the NFL. Brandon, let's take a look at these trends for this Week 25 podcast. If you're listening to this on Friday, you got a chance to use Robbie Ray in DFS. He is facing the Giants, and Brandon, ever since he came off the disabled list with a scary concussion, dude's looked awesome.
Yeah, I mean, Robbie Ray has operated with a 3.52 Sierra on the full season against 590 batters faced. That's narrowly his best mark to date in his four MLB seasons. Last year, it was 3.59. Ray's strikeout rate in 2017 is a career high 33.2%, which would rank him fourth among qualified pitchers, behind only Chris Sale at 35.9%, Corey Kluber 34.6%, and Max Scherzer 34.2%. So he's just one percentage point away from Max Scherzer's strikeout rate. And his strikeout rate prior to heading to the DL in late July was 30.6%, thanks to a 13.2% swinging strike rate. In the four games since returning against the Mets, Dodgers twice, and Padres, his swinging strike rate is 18.2%. And game by game, his marks were 18.1%, 13%, 20.6%, and 20.8% in his most recent outing. That's combined for a 46.4% strikeout rate. Ray has allowed hard contact on 42.5%. of batted balls, which would be the highest rate among qualified pitchers. And it's actually higher in his four great games at 45.5%. But the strikeout upside is too high not to plug him in, regardless of price and matchup, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I think that's the way I'm viewing him. And I've never been a guy who has used Robbie Ray in cash, not just because of the hard contact, but also the walk rate. He's always been a high walk guy, but since coming off the disabled list, just 6 total walks and 4 starts, a 6.2% walk rate. Like, what more can I ask for? So tonight he's facing the Giants. They don't walk. They don't make hard contact. It's in a pitcher's park. He is like the ideal cash game play. And you've got Chris Sale in the same slate, who is also very good. So I love Robbie Ray right now. I loved him last year. I thought he was always underpriced. But what were you saying?
No, I love the – we're talking about Robbie Ray, and then Chris Sale, he's also kind of good.
Right, just a throw in. Yeah, I suppose he's fine. That's a good point. Yeah, his striking rate's only 36%, no biggie. But yeah, I mean, with the way that Ray has done since returning, I cannot fade him. I will pay whatever I need to pay. If it's against a high walk team, maybe I'll get skittish, but hey, he's been better there too. So give me all the Robbie Ray I can handle, man.
Yeah, and I think it says it all. That you got so caught up in what Robbie Ray's doing that when you actually did think about Chris Sale, like by comparison, like he's also kind of on that same plane right now, which says it all.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's that says a lot about Robbie Ray. I'm viewing him as an ace. That's what he is. And even in a bad park, you know, he pitches in a hitter's park. I don't care. He's Robbie Ray, man. So let's light him up. It's pretty easy for me to like Robbie Ray. I can't say the same about Eddie Rosario, who's kind of a weirdo from a DFS. He's kind of weirdo in real life, but weirdo from a DFS perspective, too. And he's a hacker, and not like a cool hacker. He's like he swings at everything. It bothers me some of the pitches he swings at, but you can't argue with the results this year for Rosario. He had a walk-off dong on Wednesday where he almost fell over swinging at it. He, like, stumbled backwards, which was strange. He's now up to 23 home runs in the season. His isolated slugging percentage is .213, and again, that includes a slow start. Since the All-Star break, he's at 13 home runs with a .273 isolated slugging percentage, and it kind of makes sense. His hard hit rate, 36%, with a 42% fly ball rate, neither of which is bad, and when you combine it with a 17% strikeout rate, you can see how he is getting these results. Rosario is still a free swinger, but he's drawing more walks, he's getting results. Brandon, I kind of feel like I need to buy in. Is it bad, though, to just get on the bandwagon now with his price being $4,000 on Friday's slate?
Well, I want pieces of this Minnesota offense.
Because they are the best team in baseball?
Sure. I mean, this is the heat check, yes. So we can make that claim.
Yes. All right.
They're first in ISO against righties in the past 30 days, second in both WRC Plus and WOBA. They're also top 6 against lefties in all of those in the past 30 days. I think my biggest issue for Rosario is he had been hitting cleanup, but hit 6th in 3 of his past 4 games. Is he still going to be worth $4,000 on FanDuel if he's hitting 6th?
Yeah, I mean, those are all against lefties, and he's a lefty, so like it's been a very weird stretch for the Twins. They faced 3 lefties in the past 4 days.
I didn't even look into that because
it would never happen in most instances. He actually is not terrible against lefties. So I don't know why they do that. They're weird, but like it has been that way. I think they had Brett Anderson last night, and so like that is okay with me. For $4,000, I'd never pay. I'd never play him if he's batting 6, but I probably wouldn't play him against the lefty anyway. So against a righty, Rosario's great. Are you okay with him at 4K if he's batting cleanup and against a righty?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I don't know. I guess I've been too focused on football to even realize that they face.
Well, I never use the Twins against lefties anyway, so I haven't really been paying a super close attention to them either in those instances. Fair. But,
They have been pretty good against lefties, like I said.
Yeah, they have. Without Miguel Sano, too, which makes it weirder. I don't know how they're doing it, but they are. I guess Byron Buxton's best hitter in baseball, so of course. He had a walk-off dong last night, too, so they're walking off everybody. So, hey, let's go Twins, baby. Let's move on to your second trend, Brandon. And that's about one of our favorite teams here, Brandon, the Oakland A's. And as weird as it may be, given the changes that they've made, it's not in a disparaging way. We are talking about the Oakland A's in a positive sense in the middle of September because baseball is weird, bro.
Baseball is weird, bro. That's our new tagline.
There we go. I like it.
I forget the other ones we've come up with, but
they were something weird. It was something disparaging. I know. I don't know. I don't remember though.
It's probably like why not?
Yeah, why not? I think it actually was that. Yeah, sure. Why not?
My goal this week was actually going to be to talk about only teams with playoff chances, you know, good offenses overall, yeah. But that's out the window with what the A's are doing. In the past 30 days as a team, they're third in WRC plus at 123. They're also third in ISO, fourth in WOBA, third in walk rate, and fourth worst in strikeout rate, because they are the A's still, no matter what they're
gotta
doing.
Gotta toss it in there, yeah.
Against righties, though, in the past 30 days, their WRC plus jumps to 135, which is best in baseball, as is their 373 team WOBA. Again, that's against righties in the past 30 days. And there are still individual bats to like, which is really important to me. Sometimes team stats don't always point to particular bats, but we have Matt Olson. He's got a 168 WRC plus against righties on the full season with a 44% hard hit rate. Chris Davis is at 135 and 41%. Matt Joyce, 127, 32.5. Jed Lowry, 119. I was waiting for that.
Yeah.
119, 36.5. Matt Chapman, even at 113 and 37, or 35.7, rather, in terms of hard hit rate. In fact, their active roster the full season against righties is second in WRC plus, third in WOBA, fifth in hard hit rate, and first in both ISO and fly ball rate. I know we've talked a lot about the A's. We've kind of been worried about that strikeout rate, but this is now an expensive team with no shot at the playoffs. Can we feel safe about that?
I think so. I actually was looking into the A's a couple of days ago, because they're facing Doug Fister, who had actually been really good recently. I wanted to use Doug Fister, and I think I did. And it didn't go well, if I'm recalling correctly, which is bad on me. You know, fool, joke's on me for trying to use someone against the A's, so I fully deserve that. But then I saw that they were second in active roster WRC+, and it just, like, it blew my mind that this could be happening. And I want to pitch this to you, because this is not coming from me. I would make this comparison without giving it a second thought, but this was from someone who is much more intelligent than me. Matt Olson, Cody Bellinger. Do you see any parallels there?
I mean, Cody Bellinger, by comparison, is a nice player. Like a fine young player. What should I be seeing there?
I mean, it's the hard hit rates, the kind of elevated strike rate. It was Eno Saris who initially made that comparison. I think it was a while ago. So he got on the Matt Olson bandwagon pretty much right away. So credit to Eno for spotting that, because I was hesitant with the strikeout rate. I love the dongs, but hey, I mean, it kind of holds up, even with his expanded sample for Olson. So I love this A's team, and I'm still okay occasionally targeting righties against them if they are good. Not Doug Fister anymore. That was dumb. Really stupid idea, Jim. But I think that they're good enough where I have to think twice about that despite their strikeout rate.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about the A's a lot. It's late in the year, but they still have bats that I want to target. And
how fun are they going to be next year?
Don't even get me started on next baseball season, Jim.
It's in 2 weeks when it starts, so get pumped, man.
Yeah, pitchers and catchers just reported.
Yeah, exactly. 3 weeks left in this year, and then 2 weeks until next year starts. So let's take a look at my second trend. Another favorite of mine has always been Carlos Carrasco, and when I've discussed him in the past, people have always kind of clapped back by saying how unpredictable he is. And in the past, that was pretty true. He was kind of erratic, but it seems like he has been a lot more steady recently. Over his past 7 starts, Carrasco has gotten at least 8 strikeouts in every game except for one. That one start that he didn't was against the Red Sox, who are very much a low strikeout team. In this 7 start stretch, he has allowed one or fewer runs in every game except for that one against the Red Sox. And even when you include that game, he's at 9 earned runs total in a 7 start sample, and 6 of them came in one game. That's not bad. Listen to his point totals on FanDuel for these past 7 starts, including that Red Sox game: 64, 45, 20, 55, 46, 61, and 55. He has been between 45 and 64 points in every game again, except for one. For the full season now, Carrasco's Sierra is down to 3.38, 28% strikeout rate, 5.7% walk rate, and his swinging strike rate is 13.3%. Over his past 16 starts, that Sierra for Carrasco slides down to 3.02 with a 31% strikeout rate and 4.8% walk rate. He is having a great year, and it gets even better the more recent you make it. So, Brandon, Carrasco's on a tremendous team. They've won 22, I think, consecutive games now. That doesn't hurt, and he is just dealing. Is it fair for me to call Carrasco a surefire ace for DFS?
I mean, yeah, Cleveland's going to lose soon enough, but it's really...
Are you sure about that?
No.
I mean, okay, so I have a roommate from Cleveland, a college roommate from Cleveland, who asked his friends this. Is it more likely that Cleveland wins out or that the Browns go to the Super Bowl?
I mean, I think the Browns could go to the Super Bowl.
If they were starting Cody Kessler, sure, but they're not. So
they kept
no chance now. They threw that one away.
I mean, how many games are even left in the baseball season?
September 15th. Means there are 17 days left.
So that'd be like a 39 game win streak.
Yeah, somewhere around there.
That ain't happening.
But they've already won 22, so it's only 17 games. Can they get a 17-ish game win streak in there?
No.
No, oh, all right, well, you gotta poo-poo all the fun. Anywho, back to Carrasco. Sorry, I changed topics.
What do you think
there.
Is more likely?
Well, if they were starting Cody Kessler, the Browns have like a 10% chance to win the Super Bowl, but they're not, so it's zero.
I think we can still play Carlos Carrasco, though, so there's a silver.
Okay, sure.
like I was trying to mention, there's not many better teams out there to help a starter pick up a win aside from Cleveland right now. And Carrasco's actually mixed up his pitches pretty well, which I always look into. He's throwing his slider a lot more than he did at the start of the year. And he's pretty much switched his curveball usage to a sinker. So even offenses that may have seen him earlier in the year try to study him. Things are different. And I've always been on Carrasco. I feel like every time I play him, or at least that about 2-3 years ago, I'd play him a lot and things would never go quite as
correct.
Planned. But I think he's up in that, not that ace tier, but probably the tier below.
Yeah, I think he's in the, I don't know, Strasburg's been great recently, so I can't even put Strasburg down there. But he's in like that second tier, I think, is where Carrasco is there. Robbie Ray is kind of still there. He may be on the upper end of it now, but I think that Carrasco is fully there, and he is worth his price for DFS. So give me all the cookie Carrasco I can handle. Let's move on to your third trend, Brandon. Let's have some fun here, baby. Let's talk some Phillies. Rhys Hoskins doing stupid things to baseballs, blast him into orbit. And your third trend is look at the Phillies offense in the second half.
Yeah, I think this is a very on-brand trend.
Yeah, it is. It is. We're talking – we like bad teams. Like, we love the A's. We used to love the Tigers. Rest in peace. Why not the Phillies, man?
In the past 30 days, the Phillies have been an above-average MLB offense with a 106 WRC+, despite the fifth-lowest walk rate and seventh-highest strikeout rate in that stretch. Their 337 WOBA is ninth-highest in baseball in the past 30 days, though their 29.3% hard hit rate is just 22nd. But like the A's, they have individual bats worth targeting. The first, of course, Rhys Hoskins, whose price is up to 4.5K on FanDuel. In the past 30 days, Hoskins has a 45.3% hard hit rate, which is 14th in Major League Baseball, a 53% fly ball rate, which is 19th, and a 505 ISO, which is second. Luis Valbuena is third at 423, so there's a huge gap there.
Man.
But he's still no JD Martinez, whose ISO is 529 in that span.
Nobody is JD Martinez.
I think our note sheet begs to differ.
I may or may not have said that Luis Valbuena is better than JD, but then I quickly retracted. it was really dumb, and I apologize to JD. Luis Valbuena, very good, though.
Yes, but between Valbuena, JD Martinez, and the Phillies, this is a great trend for the podcast.
Exactly.
Odubel Herrera has a 178 WRC+ in the second half, despite just a 27% hard hit rate, but his hard hit rate is never really anything to get excited about. Nick Williams has a 35% hard hit rate and a 124 WRC plus, paired with a 28% strikeout rate. In this second half, the Phillies have the ninth best offense in baseball by WRC plus, and that's really what this is about. Can we target this team with that terrible record?
Yeah, why not? I love them, and I think the good thing here is that we talked before about how offenses using young guys are scary. This one isn't, because our young guys are actually stupid talented, whether it's Rhys Hoskins, you mentioned Nick Williams, Aaron Altherr, who's been kind of in and out of the lineup with injuries, but he has like insane batted ball numbers against righties, even though he's right-handed. So I'm stacking them on Friday night. I think they're facing Daniel Megden. I am stacking them there.
It's an eight.
Want to Jones. Find? Eight yeah, Jones exactly. It's the heat check game, basically. but yeah, I think that I want to find ways to get Hoskins in there because he's unfadeable right now. And I know that that's not a thing for a hitter, but it might be for him. He is what Aaron Judge was, I guess, is now again. But what Aaron Judge was right before the All-Star break. So I'm trying to find ways to get Hoskins in. I know it's expensive, but he's worth it right now. And I have no really big concerns about using this offense personally.
Yeah, I hear Judge is a very big fan of Rhys Hoskins.
Yes, he wishes Mike, to one day be him.
Mike Trout as well.
Yes, exactly. They can all aspire to great things. Bryce Harper on the disabled list taking notes. I can't say that about Bryce. That's also mean. But yeah, I mean, this is just a really fun team, and I have no concerns there. Now, Brandon, we've talked about the Cincinnati Reds a good amount recently. I think it's for pretty good reason. And I want to do it again here because Scott Schebler specifically is doing some pretty fun things. Earlier in the year, he was killing everything that came his way. He actually led the National League in home runs at one point as one of the first guys to hit 20 on the year. It's now the middle of September, so a long time away. He's still at 26. It's not good. But part of that is injury. He also had a slump earlier this summer. Since he returned from the disabled list, Schebler has been really good. He's up to 79 plate appearances against righty since returning, which is pretty close to being a legit sample. In that time, he has 3 home runs, 2 triples, and 6 doubles, meaning 27% of his balls in play have resulted in extra base hits. That's not too shabby. His batted ball data, just as good. He has a 48% hard hit rate against righties, 9% soft hit rate, 39% fly ball rate. This is back to what he was doing before when he was leading the league in home runs. It hasn't come for free, though. Schebler's strikeout rate is 29% since returning, which is much higher than he'd want it to be and much higher than he was before, and he has just been hitting hard enough to mask that. But at the end of the day, he's 2,900 for Friday's slate, and nobody ever uses Schebler. I can deal with some strikeouts there. So, Brandon, it's still a small sample on Schebler, but are you willing to buy into him based on what he has done so far since returning?
Yeah, I think I'm a Schebler homer simply by association of knowing you.
Yeah.
And I know how you're a big Scott Schebler guy.
I traded him in Dynasty earlier this year, though, so I got bad karma coming my way.
Well, he's also moved up in the order, which I like to see. He had 7th when he returned for about 3 weeks, then ticked up to 6th for a few games, but then hit 5th in Cincinnati's past 2 games. At 2.9 on FanDuel with that hard hit rate, that's really nice to see, particularly without Billy Hamilton at the top of the lineup.
Always got to toss in some Billy Hamilton slander. Yeah, I think that
He gets on base. Which is, money ball gets on base, but
Hamilton?
Yeah.
It's accidental whenever he does. But yeah, he does occasionally stumble his way on base. But yeah, I think that this lineup is pretty fun. And Schebler in that park is a tremendous asset. He's facing Chad Kuhl today, who is, for some reason, a DFS darling sometimes. But I will happily use Schebler against Kuhl because Kuhl has a huge hard hit rate. So give me Schebler and give me all that money for Friday night. Let's hope. Let's hope he doesn't strike out like 4 times. Let's move on to a guy who could do that, Brandon. Strike out 4 times. And that's Kyle Schwarber because he was demoted earlier in the year. And it was a bummer because I love Kyle Schwarber. He's so good. He is just massive dingers. And if we're looking at Schwarber, I think it's kind of a delicate discussion because he's had a kind of a tale of 2 seasons. So your fourth trend, looking at what we've seen from Schwarber here recently, to kind of dissect how we should value him in DFS.
Yeah, I always have trouble with the popular teams like the Cubs, Red Sox, Yankees. And I mean, Schwarber's got a 36.4% hard hit rate on the full season with a league average WRC plus of 100. Just a 330 WOBA. That's not any good for DFS. I mean, just an average hitter based on that. In the first half, though, over 277 plate appearances, Schwarber had a WRC plus of 81 with a 301 WOBA and a 31% hard hit rate. Obviously, he's played better in the second half just based on those numbers. Over 173 plate appearances in the second half, his hard hit rate is up to 45.6%. His WRC plus is 131. And his WOBA is 377. He also has a 296 ISO in the second half, which is up from 216 in the first half. Schwarber hit second in Chicago's lineup from roughly mid-August to early September, but has started just four of their past nine games, despite hitting well overall in the second half. He's hit fifth twice and sixth twice in his starts. At 3.6K, is Schwarber on the radar if he's hitting sixth with spotty playing time?
Yeah, I think he is. Just because the question I have to ask myself when I'm dipping that low is, does this guy provide salary relief for Schwarber? That's obviously no. But if no, does he provide insane upside? Does he have double dong upside? And I think that for Schwarber, for Ian Happ as well, that answer is always going to be yes against right-handed pitching. And with Schwarber, I think, you know, not facing lefties, it's going to hopefully bring his price down a bit, but I don't really care. Like, I'll use him at 3.6K, batting sixth, because he has that insane upside, and I think that people are still kind of viewing him through that light of, hey, this guy got benched early in the year, sent down to AAA, maybe I don't want him, but I'll take him. I don't care if he's hitting second, you know, that's just icing on the cake, to be fully honest. Like, I'll take him batting sixth with the way that he is swinging it. And I think that Schwarber is a guy I want to target pretty much whenever I can. He's a very good hitter. He is finally starting to get the good results we expect him to have. And I should have expected him to struggle earlier in the year. Coming off of a full year off with that torn ACL, he probably should have been expected to have a rough start. He did that. Now he's back to being what he was in 2015. So, yeah, I'm okay with it. Are you okay with him batting sixth?
Yeah, I think the problem that I have with guys like this, like we talked about with Aaron Judge, is I don't like to stack the offense, but if I like an individual bat, uh-huh. Do I play the one-off or do I go the full stack even if it means eating chalk? I think I'm still fine if I have to plug him in because he's probably, like you said, going to be the forgotten guy in the stack just because he got demoted. I haven't really tracked his ownership. I should have looked back, but it feels like he's underowned.
Yeah.
So that makes me like him even more.
Yeah, if they have a lineup with Schwarber, Ian Happ, and Alex Avila, I'll stack him against Max Scherzer, man. Not really. stupid to say, but I might, you know. I love all those guys. So I actually like the Cubs a lot in general. So give me all the Schwarber I can handle. One team we didn't really like before, Brandon, is the New York Mets. We talked about the Mets last after Michael Conforto's injury, rest in peace, and we both agreed that they were a pretty useless offense for DFS, so we could target easily with pitchers. I'm starting to worry about whether or not that's actually true. Conforto's last game was on August 24th, meaning we're at almost a month since his injury, and if we look at the past 30 days, he'll be in there a bit, but most of it is with the lucky few who are not, you know, dealing with some life-ending illness or illness on the Mets. But over the past 30 days, the Mets are still somehow 10th in the league in WRC plus against righties. I don't get it, but that's pretty incredible. They're 15th in walk rate, 9th in strikeout rate, and 16th in hard hit rate. I know none of those are incredible, but this team is supposed to be a team we can target at will. The most concerning number in there to me is the strikeout rate. If they're performing above expectations and avoiding strikeouts, it means we're going to be spinning our wheels by targeting pitchers who are facing them. Increased ownership with a cap ceiling is no bueno. So I'm not sure I want to go so far as to stack the Mets yet, but that's much more realistic now than I thought it would be. And I'm definitely lowering my expectations of pitchers who are facing them. So, Brandon, what about you? How are you handling the Mets given what they've done without Conforto?
This is definitely a strange one. Baseball is weird, bro. if this doesn't prove it to you, nothing will.
Right.
This team was going to be so clearly just bad without Conforto and everyone else after all the moves that they've made. And it doesn't even seem like it's fluky, though. Mm-hmm. Like, they have a 9.3% swinging strike rate as a team among players on the active roster in the past 30 days. That's seventh best in baseball. And I thought this was going to be a place we could look to for strikeouts. That's not the case. It's not even like their strikeout rate is weirdly depressed with a high swing strike rate. This is just a team that I'm avoiding, both with pitchers, but of course with those hitters, with those lineups that they're rolling out.
Yeah, I mean, I that's what I said is like I'm not super anxious to stack them. Being 15th in hard hit rate is okay, but it's not like great. Maybe I'll do it in a great matchup, but overall, it's more to me a bigger implication on opposing pitchers. So you can still do it if you want, but I'm not really inclined to do so. This Mets team is better than I thought they would be without Conforto in there, so I'm probably just going to avoid from now on. Let's finish up things here with situations to monitor for Week 25. Going back to the Reds, they are still shuffling their leadoff guys around in Billy Hamilton's absence, which means could have some value there. Now, they had Jose Peraza there last night, which kind of stinks because he's the discount version of Hamilton, but they have used both Jesse Winker and Philip Ervin there as well. Brandon, do either Winker or Ervin float your boat?
These are both limited plate appearance samples, but Winker at least has a 134 WRC plus. Irvin's at 126. I like this offense still more with those guys at the top than Billy Hamilton. It's not Billy Hamilton's favorite podcast by any means. We know how much he drags down their hard hit rate, and I just like the Reds more, and I don't mind either of those guys. Is that dumb?
No, I think I wish Winker had a higher fly ball rate, but he has still gotten home runs. So maybe he's just hitting the ball hard enough where it doesn't matter. So, yeah, I like both those guys too, and I think that this is a good lineup to look at the top to see which guy is there. Peraza, not super interesting for me, but those two certainly are. The Red Sox have been doing the same thing with their leadoff spot using a rotation of Dustin Pedroia, Xander Bogaerts, and Eduardo Nunez in that slot. It keeps Mookie Betts batting cleanup. Andrew Benintendi is third against righties. None of the guys at the top with Pedroia, Bogaerts, and Nunez have popped, but Brandon, do you want to target them when they're at the top of the order?
Do any Red Sox have pop?
Andrew Benintendi and Mookie Betts.
But other than that?
Mitch Moreland sometimes? Yeah.
Well,
when he feels like it,
I just never want to target the Red Sox, and it's not just to be like a DFS hipster. I mean, they're bottom hard hit rate.
Is that a thing?
Probably.
Fair enough.
Yeah, they're bottom eight in hard hit rate in the past 30 days. I can't ever get excited about this offense. Is that the right way to play it?
With Betts and Benintendi, I can totally get jacked about it all the time, but I can't use those guys. Like, maybe Pedroia against the lefty, but meh. I've used Nunez again, like, once in my life, and I don't plan to do so anytime soon. The Tigers lineup is a big old woof with J.D. Martinez, Justin Upton, Alex Avila, and Victor Martinez all either hurt or traded. The lineup is pretty brutal. Listen to this last night. They had Nicholas Castellanos batting fourth, and he's great. We love him. But behind him, it's Jaime Candelario, James McCann, who is pretty good against lefties, but regardless, Andrew Romine, Jacoby Jones, and Jose Iglesias. Not great, Bob. Brandon, how aggressive do you want to be in using pitchers against these guys?
Well, they're sixth in strikeout rate in the past 30, but they're actually second in hard hit rate against lefties in the past 30 days. An 11th in strikeout rate, and their marks against lefties of late look pretty nice, actually. They're very bad against righties, so that would be my preference. Mm-hmm. Is that the way to play it?
Yeah, I am using Carson Fulmer against him tonight. He has a 6 ERA and I think a 5 point something Sierra, so going pretty hard. He looked better in his last start, which is why I'm doing it. But hey, I think that they are bad right now against righties, against lefties. Sure, I'll go Nicholas Castellanos and James McCann, but not against righties. They're bad. With Dexter Fowler banged up, the Cardinals have been using Jose Martinez more in the cleanup spot, even against righties. He crushes lefties, no concerns there. But even against righties, he has a 38% hard hit rate. Comes with a higher-than-desired ground ball rate, but he doesn't seem that bad. Brandon, are you cool rolling out Martinez at his pricing?
The results are there, for sure. He's got a 142 WRC+, 389 WOBA. Can't ask for much more. I wish he was not an outfielder.
Yeah.
He was 2.8K in his last game, so that's nice.
Their whole outfield is fun. You mentioned Harrison Bader on the last podcast. He's there. Stephen Piscotty has been great since coming back from the disabled list. Randall Grichuk is there. They're all value guys, and they're all hitting the ball well. So I love that outfield in general, and Jose Martinez is a big part of that. Closing up here, we could not end the podcast without discussing Lonnie Chisenhall back to batting second for Cleveland against righties. He didn't leave with an injury last night, so I'm praying that Chisenhall is okay, but not only is he batting second for a great team, but he has a 33% hard hit rate and a 48% fly ball rate against righties. So, Brandon, how much Lonnie Chisenhall is too much Lonnie?
That is a trick question. There is no such thing as too much Lonnie. Oh,
bravo. Good answer. You nailed it.
Although I wish his name was not Lonnie.
No, that's the best part of it. What do you mean?
Lonnie.
That's the best part about Lonnie Chisenhall. Outside of his fly ball rate, is his name. What are you talking about?
If you just look at it for long enough, and then you realize that that's someone's name, Lonnie. I hope no Lonnies are listening, but
I love Lonnies. Every Lonnie listening.
I think my biggest issue is that it's like Donnie, but it's it's a letter that most names don't start with, so it's just looks a little off.
I'm disappointed in you because Lonnie is an amazing baseball name, and
Chisenhall's great.
I use him for that reason. I want to see Lonnie on my rosters, and I can shout Lonnie when he hits another home run. So I don't see any downsides here. Give me all the Lonnie I can handle, and that is the way I'm handling Cleveland right now. They're pretty good. And that is all we have for this Week 25 podcast. So we got to close up shop here. Again, a reminder, please subscribe to the podcast on SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, the Google Play Store, and the TuneIn app where you can get 30 free days of the NFL for free. I can say free twice in one sentence because why not? If you're Lonnie, if your name is Lonnie, please subscribe as well because we love you extra because you have a great name. Brandon may not, but I do. I assure you of that. Brandon, where can people find you on Twitter to yell at you if their name is Lonnie?
I am at Gadula13, GDULA13. It is free to follow me. Very free. And Lonnie, I want to be friends with you.
All righty. I like it. Good note to end on. I am at Jim Sanes, JimSanes. You can also follow the Number Fire Podcast Network at Number Fire Pods, PODS as in podcast. We'll be back at you again next Friday with the final MLB version of this podcast. But until then, good luck with your lineups, and we'll chat to you again next week. This has been the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast powered by Number Fire.